Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Thank you for joining us on this week's episode. We hope you're all having a great summer out there. It's been a gorgeous summer here in Oregon, so hopefully wherever you are in the world, you're having a great summer. Today we want to talk about the Portland Trail Blazers and what it means if they get Carmelo Anthony. Now, I'm sure a lot of you heard about that trade, not sure how you feel about it. Let me give you a quick breakdown on how I feel about it. Basically, my stance is that I don't want it to happen. I don't think that Carmelo brings enough to this team to really give up what they're going to have to give to get him. I know a lot of people think it's just role players or just draft picks, but you know that's depth that they really don't have any to spare right now. They have a lot of guys, but you know last year they had a lot of injured guys, and I'm not so sure this year is not going to be the same boat. So I would definitely say shy away from getting rid of depth that you just got. And then also with future assets, you know, if you're trying to bring in a guy that at the most will probably only be here a year or two, I mean, even if he wanted to be here longer, the dude's 33, he doesn't have that many years left in the tank. So even if he wanted to sign a multi-year contract extension, I'm not sure that he has it in the tank to play that long. And even if he does he have it to play to the high level? Probably not. We've seen that NFL players may be able to play in their 40s if they're a quarterback named Tom Brady. But for the most part, NBA All-Stars tend to taper off a bit in the twilight of their career, especially as they cross the 30-year mark, and Carmelo's already turning 33 this year. So I'd say pump the brakes on that deal. You don't have to get Carmelo. I mean, it would have been neat to see Paul George here because he is a current top 5, top 10 athlete in the NBA, but Carmelo's not there anymore. Yeah, he's a 10-time All-Star, including 2017, but let's face facts. When's the last time the East was stacked with forwards that could play at an All-Star level? There's not a ton of them over there. You basically got what Cleveland has and then some guys in Washington, and then some guys in Boston, and that's kind of the East right now. That's really the only guys out there. I mean, Atlanta doesn't have much to offer. Charlotte doesn't have much to offer. Orlando doesn't have much to offer. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. There's just not a ton of talent in the Eastern Conference. So, yeah, he's a 10-time All-Star, but what does that actually mean? I mean, that's not necessarily a great thing to put on your resume anymore. It could be just you're one of the more popular players in the NBA. It doesn't mean that you're one of the best current players in the NBA. Is Carmelo one of the best in the NBA? Yeah, probably. But does that mean that he's going to equate to an amazing talent in Portland? That I couldn't tell you. I know that he has fizzled out in New York after he wanted out of Denver. I don't know what he has left. A lot of people say, you know, what if we get Olympic Carmelo? Well, you could, except that that's a pretty small sample size to be looking at. And also, I'm not sure you're going to get that over the course of an 82-game season, let alone into the playoffs. And especially if you get matched up with a team like San Antonio or Golden State, you're going to have your work cut out for you. Because you're going to be facing some of the best defensive players in the league, and they're going to be looking to shut down guys like Carmelo and CJ and Damian. And then you're going to have to win with your depth. But oh, wait, you don't have depth anymore because you traded all the way to get Carmelo. So you can't exactly just go out and sign new guys, because with Carmelo, you're probably more over the luxury tax than you already were. So it's not like he helps your salary cap situation either to help you go out and pursue some guys that might help with the depth issue you're now going to have. Because if you trade away a guy like Myers Leonard or Mo Harkless or Al-Farouq Aminu or somebody like that, the chances are you're not going to be able to sign someone that's ready to compete right now. So getting Carmelo, yes, on paper, you'd probably be a top 5, top 6 team in the Western Conference, but at what cost? Now, are you trying to just sell tickets and get fans excited, or are you trying to be a competitive team in the Western Conference? If you're trying to be a team in the Western Conference that can actually compete come playoff time, I'm not sure this deal works for you. But if you're just trying to sell tickets, well, get that deal done, because that's exactly what you're going to need if you're going to try to sell tickets this year, because the product you're going to get this year isn't going to be drastically different from what you got last year. It's just not in the cards because your players are basically the same. You know, you do have Caleb Swanigan and Zach Collins coming in after being drafted in the draft last month, but what are they going to do right away? Are they going to perform right away? Are they even going to get time on the floor right away in important games? That remains to be seen. We know Terry Stotts prefers to play his proven veterans. So guys like Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless and Noah Vonleh and Ed Davis probably going to get those minutes before a guy like Swanigan or Collins gets any time. Not to say they won't see the court at all, but I'd be shocked if they get some big bench minutes in the early going of the season. You know, it'd be great if they could do it then and kind of work out the kinks before the All-Star break, but my thoughts tell me that you're probably going to see them get, you know, between 5 and 10 minutes a game at most to start, and then maybe if a guy goes down or if they have a breakout couple games, maybe they get some more time. But you take a look at guys like Alan Crabb, who's been fighting for minutes for a few years now, and he still just gets a few a game. I don't know that you can really, I mean, it's not apples to apples. He's not a big guy. So, you know, if you've got a big man that can produce, you obviously should put him in. But that's just not Portland's MO. So we'll see what they do with that. So if they bring Carmelo in, yeah, it could boost ticket sales. It could boost excitement levels. But as far as true elite ability to compete with guys like Golden State, Houston, Minnesota, San Antonio, not necessarily in that order. Then you've also got New Orleans, who added Boogie Cousins last year, and they already had Anthony Davis. Now they've added Rajon Rondo. Doesn't mean that they're going to be amazing, but, you know, that's three stars right there, two superstars and one all-star. Then you've got in Minnesota, you have Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns, and now Jeff Teague. You got a pretty solid roster there, and Tom Thibodeau is the head coach, so that's going to be trouble. Sacramento Kings reloaded. They've got some younger talent, but if they can put together some good product on the court, you never know what you're going to get. And then you have San Antonio, who brings back a healthy Kawhi Leonard. LaMarcus Aldridge, you hope, is fired up after listening to potential trade rumors that San Antonio wanted to be rid of him as much as he wanted out of there. And then you've got Houston, who added Chris Paul. They already have James Harden, who's coming off one of his best seasons ever, which is scary because the guy's been pretty good for a while. And now they're talking about adding Carmelo. Now, if Carmelo goes there, that's a different story because those are three superstars right there. Carmelo's definitely the third fiddle of those three, but you have three guys who are definitely in win-now mode, whereas you come here, I don't know that you can say you're win-now mode. I think that Damian and CJ definitely want to win now, but this is obviously their way of telling not only Neil Olshey and Terry Sotts that the talent's not where it needs to be, but they're also telling their teammates that. So even if they don't work this trade out, hopefully that means guys like Mo Harkless, Myers Leonard, Alperen Kuminu, guys we've talked about, they're going to step up their game, if that's even possible. I mean, I'm not saying we've necessarily gotten the ceiling out of these guys so far, but that's definitely possibly the case, that this is the best you're going to see out of those guys, and that's why they're called role players. They're not guys that would probably be starting on another roster in the league, especially an established roster. So that doesn't mean that you shouldn't trade those guys away. It just means I'm not sure that you're going to get any more value than you already do. So you definitely need some better starting talent around CJ, Dame, and Nurkic, but I'm not sure that you're going to get it out of Carmelo Anthony, especially long-term, so that's where I get a little bit stuck in the mud on this deal happening. I'd probably be more of a fan of Portland trading a couple guys to New York and helping facilitate a trade that sends Ryan Anderson to Portland, because we're missing a guy at the four that can shoot. I'm not saying Ryan Anderson is a long-term solution either, but at least he'd be a cheaper one. Whereas Carmelo, you know, you get $26 million this year, $27 million next year if he opts in. If he opts out, you're out after 1 year of paying him $26.2. Is that worth it for 1 year? I guess if he gives you a title, probably. But, you know, the odds that Carmelo Anthony brings you a title, not that great. He didn't do it in Denver in his prime. He didn't do it in New York in his prime. Now he's past his prime and you want to get a title out of him. Not sure that's going to happen. But you know what? I've been wrong before. I could be wrong about this one. First to admit that. So, you know, Neil Olshey, do what you got to do. Bring him in. We'll see what he's got. But at the end of the day, it might be in Portland's best interest to bow out of this one entirely. At first, they were just trying to help facilitate Carmelo to Houston to get some players in return and hopefully unload some contracts. But now that looks unlikely. And now Portland is rumored. I haven't seen anything from Portland itself saying they're going to do this. But the rumor is that they're trying to get Carmelo for themselves. So we'll see if that's a real interest or if they're just trying to get some better players in return just so that Houston doesn't get to load up and then also unload some guys. You know, if we could get, you know, Ryan Anderson and Trevor Ariza, that'd be pretty neat. You'd have a guy that can shoot the three and can play the stretch four. And then you've also got a guy that can play three and four and can play defense, and he's a speedy guy. So I'd like to see that. I don't know that anybody else would, but I wouldn't mind bringing Ryan Anderson and Trevor Ariza into Portland. You know, maybe that's better than Carmelo. Maybe it's not. I guess there's only one way to find out, and that's to make the deal one way or the other and see what happens. And with that, we'll take our first break. We really appreciate you guys checking in today and listening to the episode. And if you can give us any feedback you might have, feel free to add us on Twitter at Fireside Radio OSN. You can also check us out on Facebook at Fireside Sports on OSN. Thank you for listening in today. We'll be back after these messages.
Say, want a brand new breakfast idea? Then get the Betty Crocker cereal tray, the Betty Crocker cereal tray. Yes, indeed. Try the brand new cereal assortment with 10 individual packages in all. 4 Wheaties, 4 Cheerios, 2 Kix. All top favorites and all extra fresh. Yes, it's fun to take your pick from Wheaties, Cheerios, and Kix. Get the Betty Crocker cereal tray, the Betty Crocker cereal tray. Get that tray today.
Tomorrow morning, the all-star lineup of new 1952 Buicks goes on display at your Buick dealers. And believe you me, they're the smartest, smoothest-riding Buicks you've ever seen. With new surprise features you thought years away. So don't miss the fun. Bring the whole family to see the advanced new Roadmasters, the exciting new Supers, and the brilliant new specials that combine big car luxury with economy price. Yes, don't miss the new 1952 Buicks at your Buick dealers tomorrow.
Well, you'll just know you're headed for pleasure when you take your first taste of swell Lipton tea. Because, oh, what a world of contentment there is in every cupful. What flavor. What wide-awake flavor. No wonder the tea experts say there's only one word to describe Lipton's, and that's brisk. No wonder more folks enjoy Lipton's than any other brand of tea in the world. It's because Lipton tea never tastes dull, flat, or dreary. It's always lively and cheery. Yes, Lipton's is the world's favorite tea, and it will be your favorite, too, once you taste that brisk Lipton flavor. So be sure you try Lipton tea.
Welcome back into Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. We've been talking a little bit about the Blazers and what they can do with Carmelo Anthony, Ryan Anderson, some other guys like that. One of the topics I wanted to discuss is, you know, if you can't go after a Carmelo Anthony, there's another guy that you would want to go after. And one of the players that I've thought of is, what about Kevin Love? Or another option would be LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, we've heard that the Spurs are not especially happy with his play. We've heard he's not happy there. We know that Portland needs a four. Aldridge said before his time in Portland expired that he wanted to play with an all-time great center. Nurkic isn't an all-time great center yet. He has the potential to be. But there's some potential need on both sides for that to be a real play there. So I'm curious if those two sides will ever strike up a conversation. You know, San Antonio was talking about wanting to bring in or to trade away either Danny Green or LaMarcus Aldridge or a package for the number 10 pick. Or somewhere around there. Portland had the number 10 pick. I'm not sure if that conversation ever came up, but they have Zach Collins now. My question to Portland fans is, would you trade Zach Collins straight up for LaMarcus Aldridge? I would say a lot of you would probably say no. We're done with Aldridge. He left town. We don't want him back. The other half will probably say, yeah, you know what? I don't like the way he left, but at the same time, the guy's a great player. Let's see if he can work in this offense. But then some of you might remember that a lot of that offense had to get funneled through him. He didn't like to pass the ball very much. He liked to be set up on offense, whereas this is much more a share the ball kind of team. So I'm not sure if it would work. I'm just saying I'd be open to that idea in front of a Carmelo trade. Same with Kevin Love. He's a guy who likes to play the four from different spots of the floor. So he's not necessarily a stretch four, but he's pretty close. And he's got some size, he's got some strength, he can play defense when he's asked to, but he's not known for defense, but he is known for rebounding and he's known for shooting. So if you're a team that needs more shooters and better rebounding, and the chance that somebody might actually play defense occasionally, he's probably your best bet of the three. But Portland and its fans seems to have their sights set on Carmelo Anthony, so at this point we're just going to throw in the towel and say, if that's what you guys want, go for it. Let's see what happens. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that he makes his team immediately competitive at an ultimate level. I don't think that's going to happen, but again, I'll be happy to be proven wrong if that's the case. So let's move away from the NBA. It's their offseason now. There's not a whole lot going on. You know, once this Carmelo Anthony talk dies down, there's not really much for them to talk about. So let's move over to a sport that's just around the corner, and that's football. I know you guys are as excited as I am for that sport to come back around, and even more than that, I'm excited for NFL football. I'm really excited to see what the Ducks, Beavers, Huskies, Cougars, those teams have in store for us this year, but more than anything, I'm excited to see NFL football come back. You know, we're fast approaching the end of July, which once that comes and goes, it's the last month for a while that won't have football in it, so I'm excited about that. You know, you start off with the Hall of Fame game, which is nothing. Half the time it gets canceled due to weather. It's just really there because the Hall of Fame ceremony, for whatever reason, they feel like they have to have a preseason football game. And whoever plays that, lucky them, gets 5 weeks of playoffs, or sorry, postseason, preseason. I can't talk tonight. They get 5 weeks of preseason instead of four. So those of you that are glad your team is playing, just also keep in mind that you may see less of your stars in the preseason because they have to play that extra fifth week. So coaches and GMs are going to be extra careful about making sure stars are not hurt during that time because those games ultimately don't mean anything. They're glorified scrimmages. So keep that in mind. You know, a lot of people think, you know, stars don't take this seriously, and that's actually not the case. It's that teams don't think of them as games they need to really concentrate on. They're just practices, really. So they get plenty of practice between training camp and preseason and the regular season. So if a star misses one or two, it's not the end of the world. If your star is sitting out training camp or sitting out the preseason, yeah, that's reason to worry. But sitting out one game because they don't want to get them hurt, that's not a problem. So in the NFC West, we've got four teams, but only two that I really see as an actual threat to make the playoffs this year, and that's Seattle and Arizona. In a previous episode, I talked about Seattle's ability to make the postseason seemingly on the fly. They don't always have the best season. You know, 2013, they had an amazing season. But 2012, 2014, 2015, 2016, those have all been kind of okay. They haven't been jumping off the page or off the film. Their defense hasn't been as good as it was in 2013. Their offense hasn't been as good. I mean, they've had good moments and good games, but as far as putting together a streak like they did that year and then extending it into the postseason, we haven't really seen that. So now that they finally got Chris Richard in as the defensive coordinator for, the third year in a row, they've got some help opposite Richard Sherman. They've got Cam Chancellor who's going to play the whole season. Earl Thomas will play the whole season. You hope that your offensive line is better than it was last year. It certainly shouldn't be able to get any worse. You know, they kept guys from last year. They've also got some more talent now. And we'll see what happens there. They also brought in Eddie Lacy because they weren't really happy with how the running back carousel worked last year. When Thomas Rawls was healthy, he wasn't always consistent. When he wasn't healthy, he wasn't available. Then they had Christian Michael, who a lot of people really liked what they saw, but for whatever reason, they didn't feel like they needed to hold on to him. And then you have CJ Procise, who showed a lot of ability in a couple weeks, and then he went down with a season-ending injury. So we'll see what they can do. They've got a lot of talent, a lot of firepower on both sides of the ball. They're definitely going to be one of the teams to be reckoned with in the NFC, and I'm putting them at the top of the NFC West. And then you have Arizona, who nobody really knows what to expect. 2 years ago, they were one of the best teams in the league before a disaster in the playoffs. Then last year, they couldn't even get a winning record. 2 and 3 years ago, they didn't really do much. I don't think they made the playoffs either year. And they didn't really do much this year to get better. So they're still old on paper. And then on the field, they don't have a ton of young, talented guys. They're led basically by Carson Palmer, who's nearing retirement, and Larry Fitzgerald, who's nearing retirement. They have David Johnson, who's amazing, but he's kind of their best offensive firepower right now. You have Michael Floyd, who's no longer there. He's actually in Minnesota in trouble after being in New England. And that guy has just gone from one of the bright spots in the league to a train wreck, and we're not sure if he's going to play again. Too many off-the-field issues. And then you have John Brown, who's coming back from migraines or health issues. I don't know what to call him, but he wasn't himself last year. He was running the T.Y. Hilton routes in Bruce Arians' offense 2 years ago. Last year, he fell off the map, and this year I guess we'll see if he's back. And even if he is, that defense kind of fell apart last year. It was great 2 years ago. Last year it was mediocre, and this year I guess we'll see if they're even a top 20 unit. They still have the Honey Badger, and they still have Patrick Peterson, but aside from that, they're all over the place, and we'll see if they can do something about it. They definitely have their work cut out for them with a lot of offense to protect against, but you know, in their own division, they've only got Seattle, who's a really good offense. Then after that, they've got LA and San Francisco, who aren't much to talk about. So we're not going to talk about them. LA, I don't expect much out of. You know, they just keep having a carousel in the offensive line. You know, they signed Andrew Whitworth this year, who's a great tackle, but he's also getting up there in years, which may have been why Cincinnati wasn't so thrilled to re-sign him. And then you've got Todd Gurley. No one knows if year one was the real Todd or year two was the real Todd. We'll see what happens in year three. Year one, he was an amazing running back. Year two, he was okay. You know, a lot of people chalk that up to quarterback play and offensive line play. But you know what? Wasn't that different in year one, guys. He was still playing on a really bad team in a really tough conference. So, and especially a really tough division. I'm not sure we can chalk it up to year two. He just had a worse offensive line and a worse quarterback. Well, not really. So we'll see what he can do this year. They didn't have a ton of receiving talent to begin with. They brought in some guys like Robert Woods, and they drafted a couple guys, and they still have some really good talent there, but they don't have any real playmakers. And then they traded away, or not traded away, they let Lance Kendricks sign with Green Bay. They lost Jared Cook the year before, so they're kind of missing out on tight end to help. And then they've got a quarterback who we really don't know what to expect from, and a whole new coaching staff. You know, their defense is probably going to be redone by Wade Phillips, and that's probably a good thing. But really curious to see what happens with their offense this year. They've got some good talent, but I'm not sure that they're ready for a leap forward into a winning season or beyond. So I'll expect something resembling a 4 or 5 or 6 win season, but nothing beyond that. I don't expect them to get to 7 or 8, not even close. Definitely not 9 and 7. So anyway, San Francisco, they get Kyle Shanahan. They get some other guys. You know, they've got a good play caller now, but is there anything to really call? I'm not really sure about that. You know, they're still missing a quarterback. I think they're secretly, not so secretly, not so subtly either, hoping that Kirk Cousins can make his way over there. But they definitely need some help on that end. Kyle Shanahan has proven with lackluster quarterbacks before they can still get a winning season put together. But it'll be interesting to see if he can do that this year with such a talent-poor roster that he inherited from the previous two regimes. And you know, who knows, maybe he can stick around for 2 years, which will buck the trend in San Francisco, because right now they've fired the last two head coaches, both of which only served 1 year or less at the time. So we'll see what he can do. Another team I'm not expecting much out of. They're going to be lucky to get to 6 or 7 wins at the most. So here we are again with San Francisco and St. Louis, or not St. Louis, Los Angeles, being at the bottom of the barrel in the NFC West. So we'll see what they can do this year. I don't know what to expect. I mean, Jared Goff, let's see if he can do something. Let's see if whoever Kyle Shanahan starts a quarterback, probably Brian Hoyer at this point. We'll see if he can do anything. They both got pretty solid running backs. Carlos Hyde in San Francisco is solid, but not great. Todd Gurley in LA is solid, not great. I mean, he has the potential to be great. Rookie season, he was great, but then last year he took a step backwards. But if he can get back to where he was in year one or beyond, he's definitely a running back to be reckoned with. So in the division, you have 4 potential superstars at running back, 3 so-so quarterbacks, and then 1 really good quarterback in Russell Wilson, an above-average defense in Seattle, an average defense in Arizona, an average defense in Los Angeles. I'm going to keep getting that confused for a couple years until it sinks in. And then in San Francisco, you have a bottom-of-the-barrel defense. And none of them have top-flight offenses, so that's going to be a struggle. Is that if you fail to stop other teams and you also fail to score points, it doesn't put a lot of W's on the board. But Seattle will find a way to get it done. It doesn't always make sense, but it seems to always happen, whereas the other 3 teams really don't know what to expect. So wait till football season to figure that out. Just wanted to give a couple of picks. We're running short on time. We try to get you guys in and out in 30 minutes or less. We know you got busy lives, so we're coming up on the 25-minute mark, but I just want to say I really want to see J.J. Watt win Defensive Player of the Year this year. I know Khalil Mack won last year, and that was really special because he's such a special talent, but I just think that J.J. Watt is the defensive guy right now. And if he doesn't win, it's kind of what the heck happened. And last year he was out with back problems, and now he's back, and we'll see what he can do. It'd be great to see him and Jadeveon Clowney have one full season together. We haven't seen that yet. So really excited to see if that's going to come to fruition. And then on the offensive side, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Tom Brady win Offensive Player of the Year. The guy just had an amazing season last year despite missing four games. This year he gets a healthy Rob Gronkowski. They bring in Brandon Cooks. He's got James White. He's got Deion Lewis. He's got Julian Edelman and Dwayne Allen. I mean, the guy is just going to light up the scoreboard. It's pass first in that offense, and nobody does it better. You know, Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan are really, really good, and so is Drew Brees, so is Roethlisberger, so is Rivers. But at the end of the day, Brady's the guy they're all chasing. There's a reason that he's considered the GOAT and everyone else is just second best. And now, you know, with five Super Bowl rings, maybe we say Montana's not even in that conversation anymore. I don't know how anybody feels about that. I know I still think of Montana as the greatest of all time, but when you're just counting championships, it's hard to really argue against Brady being the best. But week in and week out, he does what's asked of him. Last year, I think he had 28 touchdowns and two interceptions, which is just insane. And he did that coming off a four-week vacation to start the season. The team went 3-1 without him, which is, again, just insane. So that's how good of a roster he has around him, that backup quarterbacks. In fact, they needed two of them to get the job done. Could come in and go 2-1, or 3-1, I'm sorry. That's insane. And now you got a healthy Gronk. You know, we'll see if he can stay healthy. The guy's had injury issues his whole career, but when he's healthy, he's just unbeatable. There's nobody better. And now you've got Tom Brady at the controls the whole season. It's going to be up to Tom Brady if he wants to win that award or not. Because if he does, there's not really anything in his way. He's got everything he needs on both sides of the ball to be one of the best teams in all of football. But he's got everything he needs on offense to be one of the best offenses. So I'm really curious to see what he'll do. You know, Aaron Rodgers is a dark horse there because he had such an up and down season last year that I wouldn't be surprised to have him go on another FU campaign like he did in 2015. But you've got Matt Ryan, who's out to prove that it wasn't all Kyle Shanahan's play calling, that a lot of that was his ability to get the ball in the right places at the right time. And we'll see if Steve Sarkisian can be the play caller that Kyle Shanahan was, because while I do think a lot of that was Matt Ryan's talent, a lot of it is what play is called. You know, he can only control so much. He is just one player on the field after all. So I'm curious to see what happens there. Anytime you change offensive systems, it creates issues, and we'll see what happens to them. And then as far as MVP for the season, I think that that's going to come down to those three players, Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, and Aaron Rodgers. I think one of them will be the best of anybody. Dak Prescott and Ben Roethlisberger could definitely win that award if they can win a lot of games with who they have around them. You know, Prescott is probably going to be without Ezekiel Elliott for a game or two, and defense will definitely be keying on Elliott more. I'm not sure it's going to matter because of that offensive line that they've got, but if they do find a way to get to Elliott, they're going to have to make, you know, Prescott's going to have to make some plays he wasn't necessarily asked to make last year. And then Roethlisberger, he's going to have Antonio Brown back. He'll have Le'Veon Bell back, but then he'll also have Martavius Bryant and a whole slew of receiving talent and an improved defense and a veteran team that just gets it. And, you know, they're hungry to win. They haven't been in the Super Bowl since 2010, and they're probably tired of seeing Tom Brady go. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Well, Peyton Manning retired, so now it's Tom Brady. They're tired of seeing him go, so don't be surprised if Ben Roethlisberger has an amazing year and an MVP campaign and takes Pittsburgh all the way. I definitely don't want to see it because I'm a Packers fan. I really don't like seeing Pittsburgh win anything, but because they've been arguing that they should have the trophy named after them for years, but that's up to them. And then as far as Super Bowl prediction, this year I'm actually hoping to see New England and New York Giants rematch. You know, the trilogy finally ending. We're going to see if Brady finally gets one over Eli. Eli probably doesn't have more than 2 or 3 years left the way he's going, but that defense is so stacked, and he's got an even better offense this year. They added Brandon Marshall. They already have Odell Beckham Jr. They already have some really talented receiving, and now they have some better running backs back there. They have an improved offensive line. Their defense is as good as ever. I just think that's the dark horse in the NFC. I think a lot of people are looking at Green Bay, Seattle, and Dallas, but I think New York is the team to beat when it all comes down to it, if they play the way they should. But that puts us over 30 minutes, so I want to thank you all again for listening in. This has been a really fun episode. I know you're used to having me with a co-host, but had to fly solo tonight, but that's just fine. I can talk and talk and talk, so thank you guys for listening in. Thank you to the band Liebecker for providing music for the show. They are at www.liebeckermusic.com. You can also find them on Facebook and Twitter. And please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We are Fireside Radio SN. And check out Oregon Sports News, www.oregonsportsnews.com. Check out podcasts, columns, all kinds of stuff. Just really fun stuff from people from the Northwest that really know what you guys want to see. So please check it out. Thank you again for listening in. Have a great weekend.